My name is Arthur Weed.
I've got 15 minutes worth of things to say.
I'm the attorney for Sebastian Rodriguez, who is the appellant here. And this is a case that's like a sadistic question on the bar exam about criminal law. As the court knows, it began as a vehicular homicide case in Los Angeles, one of those nightmare situations where there's a car going 100 miles an hour on the freeway, and he hits a motorcyclist, and very tragically, there's a death. And so Mr. Rodriguez was accused in the Superior Court in Los Angeles of vehicular homicide and also second-degree murder on an implied malice theory. And he was convicted of second-degree murder, and he appealed to the California Court of Appeal. And that court said that what his contention was on appeal, namely that there had been an instruction given at his trial which violated the federal constitution in that it relieved the prosecution of its obligation to prove one of the elements of implied malice second degree murder, and that element is that the defendant must be subjectively aware that his acts are inherently dangerous to human life.
Well, let me see. I think we really do know the background, and that's generally true.
Yeah.
The only issue that you're raising on appeal, as I understand it, is the third element of the second-degree murder, i.e., the state of mind element, right?
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct.
Okay, but that element was not what the second, what the Court of Appeals was talking about. They were talking about the second element, the question of danger to human life.
Well, it was raised as an element of what his intent was, or what his state of mind was. That was raised. And what the Court of Appeal did was to resolve the question by saying that his act was inherently dangerous. And so,
but didn't Rodriguez concede that issue? Didn't he concede that he admitted that his driving was dangerous and didn't contend that the second element was wrongfully established? And so if there was an error, you know, I'm seeing on the third element, his prior conviction came in for DUI, and they complete that drug and alcohol course just prior to the time the accident was in question. Why doesn't that establish that he knew the dangers of driving recklessly, especially with alcohol and drugs in his system?
Your Honor, this is where California law gets interesting, shall we say.
I'm a Californian, so.
Well, so am I, you know, and I guess I'm proud of it, you know, that our law is just a little more complex than their law is. But there is a case which I cited at page 19 of my opening brief.
Is that Venegas?
No, Shaw versus Terhune.
Okay.
Now, Venegas is the one, that's a court of appeal case in California that said that the basic speed law instruction, which was given in Rodriguez's case, did in fact violate the federal constitution.
But it goes to the second prong, and you're contesting the third prong, right?
I don't know that there's a great deal of difference.
Well, obviously there's a difference. That's why you're making a big fuss about the difference. You're saying the difference is that there has to be a subjective state of mind, and that's what the state court didn't address. There is a difference, and that difference doesn't seem to be covered by the inherently dangerous problem. It's a separate problem as to which there was evidence and as to which there was no presumption.
Right, right. Okay, now let me get back to this to see if I can straighten this out a little bit. There is a California case called Shaw versus Terhune, which I cite at page 19 of the opening brief.
Just for your information, neither of those cases is on page 19 of the opening brief, but go ahead.
What?
Yeah, go ahead. Keep going.
Well, I apologize for that. Sometimes when they get converted to a PDF, you
all
know,
right,
it makes for problems. But it is quoted. It's at 380 Federal 3rd 473. Now, That case said whether a defendant's underlying acts are inherently dangerous in the abstract, and I think it's pretty clear that what Rodriguez did is dangerous in the abstract, and then to go on with the quote, is not dispositive of the jury's determination as to whether a defendant has acted with malice. See, that's something that creates a stumbling block.
But they weren't told that either. They were told at most that it was dispositive of the second prong if you admitted to it, which you did. They weren't told it was dispositive of the subjective state of mind. Nobody ever told them that.
No, they weren't told that.
And they wouldn't have surmised it either. Why would they have?
I'm sorry?
And they wouldn't have surmised it either. Why would they have?
Well, they were told, and this is what was raised on appeal to the California courts, that if they found that he was speeding, then he had done an act which is inherently dangerous.
Right, but not that he was subjectively aware of it.
No, but what I'm saying is that that instruction would confuse a lay person. And
to be perfectly frank, I absolutely do not understand your argument. You're
okay.
Wandering around from one to another, that you have conceded that it was dangerous to human life. That's all the instruction went to. The instruction did not go to any subjective state of mind question, and so there's no reason anybody would have thought it did.
Okay. Let me rephrase it.
Okay.
As I've said, California law requires a subjective state of mind. Now, what he admitted, namely that he was guilty of gross vehicular manslaughter, that crime under California law requires only an objective state of mind. Now, what the California Court of Appeal did is to say, all right, we're not going to reach the federal question here because he admitted it. He admitted the state of mind element when he told the jury or admitted to the jury that he was guilty of gross vehicular manslaughter. And what I'm saying in my brief is that that's not true. He admitted the objective element of it, but not the subjective. And, of course, there's a big difference between the two as far as the prosecution's case goes.
But the whole case, my recollection is that defense counsel said in the closing argument, the evidence proves beyond a reasonable doubt it's a given my client is guilty of gross vehicular manslaughter. So what the trial was about was the second degree murder, right?
Right, that's right.
And evidence was put on, so the evidence of his subjective intent there was, which is what they do is when you have a prior DUI and you go to those classes and they talk at those classes about how driving under the influence of alcohol is dangerous and that it kills people, and that's how you nail people on the second degree murder, the third prong.
Well, that's correct.
And isn't that's what they argued at the case, right?
What
they didn't argue because they didn't argue because of that presumption that he had the subjective intent.
No, what I'm saying is it doesn't really matter what they argued. The problem is, what were the instructions and the way these...
What were the instructions? Nothing in the instructions said that you could presume from the fact that he was violating the basic speed law that he had subjective intent. Was there anything there that said that?
No. What I'm suggesting, and I say this in the last part of my brief, is that we don't know what goes on in the jury room, and we shouldn't know. You know, it should be private. But I think we can assume that if they're told that speeding is the same thing as doing something that's inherently dangerous to human life, they wouldn't get wrapped up in the question of whether there was subjective or objective knowledge. That's the kind of thing that people don't like about our profession, that there's all these subtle niceties, and yet that's what we're required to determine here. Now, before I sit down...
If you want to reserve some time, you should do it now.
Perhaps a minute. But one last thing. As I note in my brief, the defense asked for this instruction, and this appears at page 126 in the excerpts of record. Each of the elements of the crime must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. Implied malice aforethought is one of the elements of murder which must be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. If you have a reasonable doubt that Sebastian Rodriguez subjectively realized the risk to human life and so on. This was refused. And what I'm suggesting is that what we have here is a trial that violates the federal constitution, and so the court has no alternative but to order a new trial. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Mr. Cook.
Good morning, Your Honors. Deputy Attorney General David Cook on behalf of Respondent. With regard to opposing counsel's last point, the fact that an instruction was not given at trial doesn't bear on whether the instructions that were given were erroneous or whether any error occurred was harmless or not. We have to focus on the instructions that were given.
If I can comment, I didn't understand your argument either, because you seemed to me in your brief to be responding to not to the argument that was being made, i.e., with regard to this subjective element, but rather to be repeating what happened in the California Court of Appeals. So you were people passing in the night in terms of, you know, what arguments were being made.
Counsel, did the jury have adequate instruction to know that they had to show that he had the subjective knowledge and intent to drive recklessly and endanger human life? Did the jury have anything that would tell them that they had to find that he subjectively thought that?
The jury was instructed on implied malice, one element of which was the act was deliberately performed with the knowledge of the danger to and with conscious disregard for human life. As noted in Volumes 1 and 2 of the excerpts of record, both the Court of Appeal and the District Court found that petitioner's awareness of the dangerousness of his act was litigated at trial.
What was the evidence of his knowledge?
Well, the evidence of the
Well, I already told you one, but what was the evidence that, you know, because he's claiming that this presumption caused all sorts of problems, and so that the jury could have concluded because he was speeding that that would have confused them, and just because he was speeding they would have found him guilty of second-degree murder, right?
Well, he wasn't, well, as the evidence shows, he wasn't quote-unquote just speeding. He was driving at a very, almost twice the speed limit through city streets and swerved over. There was evidence of intoxication. The presumption itself, though, has no bearing on, as Your Honors had pointed out during argument of opposing counsel, that the presumption did not bear on the awareness or the.
Judge Callahan asked you what evidence did bear on it.
How was the case argued? How was it argued that he had this subjective knowledge? What was the evidence at trial?
Judge Callahan already told you what the evidence of trial was, at least in part. And really, you just haven't focused at all on what the case was about. But at least part of the argument, evidence of trial was that he had attended drunk driving classes, right? And what else was it?
Your Honor, I guess I'm not. I would have to say the evidence of his use of drugs, but I.
Well, no. I mean, I could argue this case for you. I mean, just if you look at the facts, that part of it was, it's not just that he was going 100 miles an hour. He was weaving in and out. Everyone was flying in different directions. All of those things are, you know, it's one thing if someone were going 35 miles an hour. That could be speeding in a 25 mile an hour zone, but that's not. I don't think most people would be able to. If that were the facts here, that he were going 35 miles an hour in a 25 mile an hour prima facie zone, it would be hard to say that the presumption might not be a problem for finding subjective intent. But there were several witnesses that testified to extremely egregious driving conduct in this case, along with the fact that he had been previously convicted, you know, all of those things. That's what your evidence was.
Yes, Your Honor.
Counsel, when do we measure what his subjective knowledge was? When he decided, I'm going to drink and still drive, when he got into the car and set forth, or when he was doing these horrendous acts of weaving in and out and finally going over the middle section of the highway?
I'm sorry, Your Honor. The question is...
Look, this is the problem. You have not focused at all on the fact that this case is about the subjective intent element and not about the dangerous to life element. And that's why you're having all this problem with perfectly reasonable questions about the subjective intent problem, because your brief shows and now your argument shows that you haven't read the opening brief. I mean, there are problems with the opening brief, but it's perfectly clear that he's trying to talk about the subjective element and not the objective danger to life element, and you apparently didn't realize that and still don't realize that. So the question that you're now being asked is, at what point does one have to have the subjective intent? You believe the evidence showed that he was drunk and or high on some drugs. Does the subjective intent, and I have the same question actually, does the subjective intent have to be when he took the drugs, i.e., because there are some statements saying that when he took the drugs and drank, he knew he was going to be driving the car, and that's the problem, or is while he was driving, because obviously there might be some question whether somebody who's drunk and had drugs at that point is capable of having a subjective intent. So which one is your understanding of when he has to have the subjective intent?
It's my understanding that he has to have the subjective. It is my understanding, excuse me, that he must have the knowledge of or the conscious disregard for human life at the time of the homicide. Therefore, at the time of his driving. But we have a course of conduct here. And, Your Honors, I apologize if I'm offending you by what is coming across as a lack of knowledge of the case, but it was my understanding that the focus here was on the error, if any, of the basic speed law as to the second element of the
impairment. Well, you're just wrong, because then you didn't read the opening brief.
I apologize, Your Honor. But as far as the evidence, the facts show the egregiousness of the driving, the use of drugs, the prior criminal history. Under those circumstances, any error in the giving of the basic speed law would be harmless.
Okay.
I apologize, Your Honor. I'm sorry.
Go back and read it. You'll see. Thank you. Sir, I'll give you 1 minute.
Your Honor, there is something that I think I'm ethically required to bring to the Court's attention, even though it doesn't help my case. Judge Fletcher asked if the jury was instructed at all over the question of whether there was subjective knowledge, and I have to tell the Court that at page 104 of the excerpts of record, there is an instruction that was given. It says, an act is done with conscious disregard when the act was deliberately performed by a person who actually knows that there is a high probability that his conduct endangers the life of other persons.
Yeah, they gave the correct instruction on malice. We appreciate you calling that to our attention, but they did give that. It's just a question of whether the presumption as to the second element, if that flowed over to the third, I think.
Well, the only thing I would say is that I think it's a question of whether, given the instructions that we can look at, there's a possibility that the federal constitution was violated. I suggest it was. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you very much. The case just argued is submitted.